Bible was bothering you?
Not the Bible, just...
In your space?
There was stuff on the table. It was making my cord wonky. I just needed it to move. It happened to be a Bible. It is unfortunate. Okay. So.
The new student Bible.
Well, we don't want the old one.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that also is an old one.
Right, this is from 1955. Like,
that looks 90s, that hot pink on true. Black. That's And look at that font. That's a 90s font.
Late 80s, early 90s, for sure. Yeah.
That's the new student Bible is, you know.
30 years old.
Yeah. All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are you, Patrick?
And not Elise McCarter.
No.
She's actually on her way to the studio.
Yeah, but we're doing it without her. We're not waiting.
We're going quick. Yeah. So.
No. Pre-recording. Recording two. She's on her way.
Yeah.
We're doing this one.
Yeah. And this is for Christmas.
Merry early Christmas.
Merry early Christmas.
Because, this is not our Christmas episode. That is to come.
That is next week.
Yeah.
2 weeks.
I don't know. At some point.
It's happening. But we have a Christmassy theme.
Yeah, because it's December and you're maybe snuggled up with a little hot cocoa listening to probably Beyond Sunday by the fireplace.
You're probably in shorts and sweating.
Yeah. With your hot cocoa by the fire because you still want to feel Christmassy.
Yeah. Maybe you're just drinking chocolate milk.
Chocolate milk and an air conditioner.
An ice cold chocolate milk. Yep. Like, chocolate milk is a good drink.
Chocolate milk's great. I like chocolate. And it's like a good protein for you.
Sure. Yeah. Why not?
That's what all those milk commercials want me to believe.
Usually it's not chocolate.
Oh, it's always chocolate.
No, but the milk mustache is
white. Milk mustache. Right. But the new commercials are like people drinking like just straight chocolate milk after like running a marathon and being like, this is so good for me.
I'd rather drink the chocolate milk than run the marathon.
That's fair.
All right, let's get into this because she's on her way. Okay. All right.
We got to get it done before she gets
here. Got to get done. This episode done before she gets here. All right, I got a new show for you coming out.
I like a new show.
On HBO Max.
Okay.
Are you an HBO Max subscriber?
I have, yeah.
Me too. I get it through my phone, through AT&T.
Okay. Yeah. It's fine. However you do it. I'm not going to judge you. Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, All right. Teams of humans.
Teams of them. Okay.
Compete against the world's most remarkable hamsters in a new show, Human versus Hamster.
This is all right. Hold on. This is not like Squid Games. This is a real. This is a real game show.
If you've not watched Squid Games on Netflix, Squid is not a part of it.
Right. That's like a fictionalized dystopian universe in which you're competing in a game for surviving, right?
And getting murdered if you fail.
Right.
Yeah. This is not that. I presume nobody dies.
This is
real, maybe the hamsters do.
This is real humans
versus real hamsters
in the year 2024, the year of our Lord. And, well, I don't know. Maybe God has forsaken us if this is what we're doing at this point. Okay. Real teams of humans against hamsters to complete tasks.
Correct.
Like get through a maze and find food and lift or spin in a wheel and.
You know, a wheel's in there.
There's got to be a wheel.
There's an eating competition.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. World's most remarkable pet hamsters versus teams of humans will compete to determine which species is superior.
Okay.
I think we know.
I like our odds. I do remember. Do you remember this Fox series that came out when we were like, it was like Man versus Beast?
Oh, yeah. 100% I watched that.
Yeah. Where it was like, here's a sumo wrestler, tug of war, and orangutan.
I definitely remember that.
Here's a sprinter.
I assume most of them were faked, but still.
Yeah. American sprinter, racing a giraffe. It's like, that's great. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. There was one great one where it was like, an elephant pulling a 747 versus a team of little people, which I believe is the politically correct term. And it was, if I remember, the elephant won, but that's
for sure. It was a different time. It
was the 90s, man. It was crazy. We had student Bibles that were new.
Different time. It was a different world. Yeah. Hamsters and humans will challenge their challenges that test their speed, strength, and agility, and of course their eating prowess.
When I think of a hamster, I definitely think of speed, strength, and agility. That is
They're one of those creatures that's like, how do they exist in the wild?
Right. How have you still survived?
Like, yeah. Where are hamsters running wild? Like, I don't see that, right?
Maybe they're not anymore. Maybe they're fully domesticated.
Not. I think so. Yeah. I can't imagine. There's hamsters out there roaming the plains.
Surviving, Not getting eaten immediately.
The team that comes out on top will then enter an epic obstacle course, the cage, where they must escape before the hamsters in order to win.
Okay, so it's teams of humans.
So first it's like human versus human.
Okay.
Probably a hamster's thrown in there as well, you know.
Just like, for adventure,
it's human versus hamster. You got to throw some hamsters in there.
Yeah.
And then the winning team will go into the cage versus the hamsters at the end.
The cage is a maze.
I don't know.
It's not a cage match where two hamsters enter.
I feel pretty confident. Yeah, I mean, again, human superiority. One of you sleeps in a cage that I built.
The other has opposable thumbs.
Yeah, so. I think we know who is the ultimate species there.
When does this come out, Patrick?
Soon. I don't know if we got a release date here.
Okay.
We also have resident hamster enthusiast and expert Brian Balthazar, who gives hamster facts.
Balthazar, okay.
Do you know that hamsters sweat through their feet?
I did not know that.
There you go.
Did I need to know that?
There you go.
I have learned something today. Yeah. You're supposed to learn a new thing every day, so that's my thing. So nobody tell me anything else important, because I've already learned a thing.
I did watch the preview YouTube show.
Yeah? How was it?
It's amazing.
Yeah. You want in? Are you committed to hamster versus human?
Yeah, I'm gonna form a team. Let's do it. Beyond Sunday versus hamsters.
I love it.
Yeah.
I like our odds. My concern is the other humans. That's where
That's probably the biggest obstacle there. Yeah. All right. If those hamsters in the preview, one of the humans contestants says, if those hamsters are listening, we're here to educate and to dominate.
Wow. So they're trying to teach the hamsters.
Yeah. What are you teaching hamsters?
Right.
I guess, you know, like Pavlov's dogs.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I will say this. Like, if they put a human into a maze that is of comparable size to the mazes they put hamsters in, right? So proportional, right? Like, don't put us in a hamster maze, but put us in a human maze. I think the hamster probably gets through it faster than we do.
I think, if I'm being honest, I think the two competitions, the hamsters are the biggest advantage. I don't know if the maze, but one is the wheel. I think they're going to crush the wheel versus humans.
Mm-hmm.
And two, probably eating. I think that they're just going to, like, they just shovel it in, you know?
That's fair. But you don't think they have an advantage in the maze?
I don't know. Maybe.
I think their sense of smell gives them an enhanced, like, if they're being attracted by
food. So there's cheese on the other side?
Well, how else does a hamster find its way through? Like, why else would they go through it?
I'm just saying, you know, is there cheese for the human? You know,
like. I mean, I've assumed there's some sort of reward, right? The $10,000, right? Yeah. Whatever the prize money is for winning is on the other side of this maze. I'm just saying, I think their sense of smell beats our problem-solving abilities in an equally difficult maze.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll have to tune in
and find out.
We'll
have to watch. Yeah.
Here's the teams. Teachers versus nurses. Trivia Kings versus Volunteer Queens. Weekend Warriors and Theater Kids. Wrestlers and Lawyers.
I don't understand this.
These are the teams.
These
are like the episode titles.
Oh, okay.
So first, again, they have their themes. So wrestlers versus lawyers versus hamsters.
Are these like WWE wrestlers, or are these
certainly
like
not.
Olympic?
Certainly not. Neither. I don't know where, you know, probably wrestling enthusiasts.
Good. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Rhode Island firefighters versus New Jersey firefighters. I mean, that's
throw down. Yeah,
yeah. Uh-huh.
Money on New Jersey.
I feel like New Jersey is going to come out on that one.
No offense, Rhode Island, but
Rhode Island even doing
a little bit of offense. Yeah,
yeah. What are they going to do about it?
Yeah, you're the size of a hamster. You're the hamster.
Putting
you
on blast, Rhode Island. What are you going to do about it? Just saying.
You're neither a road nor an island.
This comes to you from Chip and Joanna Gaines, by the way.
Oh, they're just down the road.
Yeah.
Are they hosting this, like, at their...
They're the producers. No, they have, like, an SNL cast member and, like, a football commentator are the hosts.
So. I want them to host this at their little ranchy thing, Magnolia, which is... Because then we could go, like, watch it live.
I will tell you how Chip got the inspiration for this.
Oh, this is Chip's brainchild.
These are the words of Chip Gaines.
I'm excited for this.
I don't know if you should be. I was watching Jason Kelce and Travis Kelce.
Love it.
Those are football players.
They are. Know. One of them's dating Taylor Swift.
And somehow, maybe... Kelce, at the time, ripped off his shirt at some big football event or something after he had retired.
Yeah, sure.
He shared...
It was a Super Bowl when Travis was still playing, I recall. Yeah.
Is everybody familiar? All right. And I just thought, you know what would be funny? Humans versus hamsters.
There you go. There it is.
Kelce brother rips his shirt off and you're like...
Hamsters.
Hamsters.
I will say that is exactly the level of commentary that I expected from Chip Gaines. Yeah, so
I agree completely.
Met my expectations to a T.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, listeners, this might be out by the time of this release. We don't have a release date here, but check your HBO Max subscription. If not, get that free trial.
You're going to want, maybe you're going to let these build up so that
get
you
a couple,
get,
yeah.
So when you get your week free trial, you can watch them all at once.
Yeah, binge it. Absolutely.
Yeah. This is a binge-y. It premieres November 21st. So it's already premiered.
There you go.
So you get it now.
It's already out there.
Already out.
For your Christmas watching pleasure, a new family tradition. You can all gather around the Christmas tree and watch Humans vs. Hamsters.
And and if there's a second season of Humans vs. Hamsters, we're putting our name in.
Absolutely, we are.
All right. Our main topic from Christianity Today.
Yeah.
From Russell Moore.
Oh.
Yeah, friend of the podcast.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Big, you know, not necessarily a big fan, but I know him.
We like him.
Yeah.
He's written good stuff.
Yeah, he's written some things. I respect him.
Yeah.
We probably disagree on a lot of things.
Sure.
But I at least respect his probably internal integrity towards what he believes.
Yeah.
So I think that's good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. He wrote, "Let Heaven and Nature Wail."
Our wailing sound effect.
W-A-I-L.
Oh.
Not W-H. Whale sounds coming to you from beyond Sunday. All right.
I don't know that was entirely clear. I don't know that our listeners knew that it was that kind of whale. I'm just saying.
All right. Well, there you go.
Glad we clarified that.
We'll get into what that means. All right. So he opens up here.
Okay.
"To see how much we really want to peer into the mystery of the incarnate, go to a Christmas pageant and note whether there's a plastic doll in the manger or a live baby."
Oof. Okay, we're throwing down on Christmas pageants for plastic dolls. Yeah.
Plastic doll or live baby. What do you think? What's coming out on top?
I'm
versus hamster.
Plastic doll. Plastic doll beats hamster. I am guessing that he's going to come down on the side of wailing baby. However, having hosted a number of these Christmas pageants, I do not put a live baby into the hands of children whom I do not trust to hold said baby.
That's, I think, the biggest thing, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm all for...
Usually, Mary is played by a fourth grader.
Right. Who maybe is not equipped to hold a
squirmy baby.
Yeah, a month-old child who is potentially squirmy. Yeah,
100%. And I mean, doll makes more sense.
Yep.
Babies aren't predictable.
Sure.
And, you know, can't give notes on what would happen if a baby cries out during shepherd's lines. You know, that makes sense. Now, though, we do at chapel do bring in a live baby.
We do. I get to do that. In fact, it'll be tomorrow when this comes out. Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be the next 2 days. It's not like something you can come see, so like stay home. But yeah, that'll be happening. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not open to the public.
It is not open to the public. Yeah, but we have usually a sibling of one of the kids is brought in. Usually, you know, 0 to 6 months in age range, and they get to hang out with whichever person is leading chapel for a few minutes, and we talk about having a live baby and what that looks like, and getting ready for the baby, and all the Advent stuff that Patrick is poopy on.
Well, I've gotten ready for a baby. At this point, I have a baby.
You
so, you know, like...
Your Advent was like November, so whatever. It's fine.
I've also led the baby chapel and held a little baby. So
there you go. It's fun.
Yeah,
yeah. It's fun. It's a good time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I personally, if we were doing a Christmas pageant and we had adult Mary, I'd be all for a real baby. Like, I think that's fine.
I'm not sure the original Christmas pageant had an adult Mary.
Well, all right. If we had a Mary who was of...
Competent
age to hold said child safely.
Sure.
I'm all for real baby, let it happen.
Okay.
But for practicality matters when it's a third grader baby doll. Anyway, I don't think that's Mr. Moore's point.
He's not like, it's not a nativity if there's not a live baby. I just want everybody to know that.
If that was his point, we should have found a different article.
I didn't read it, so that seems to, you know, he's going off now. On
What's he actually got to say here?
All right. Our own life histories start with our own nativity scenes, usually these days under fluorescent hospital lights. We don't remember any about that ourselves, of course, but some of us get to see that origin story of a child. Yep. The moment leaves some people, and he's going to quote writer Carlos Fuentes here, with awe. And he says, "I cannot explain it, nor can I imagine it. I can only bear witness to it. The moment Cecilia emerged and cried out for the first time, I knew that I was hearing a proclamation of nature, the newest but also the most ancient." All right, so this is kind of what Let Heaven and Nature Wail. This is what we're getting to. Not just about
Christmas pageants.
Not just about Christmas pageant babies.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the baby cry.
Mm, okay.
Now, you've had two babies.
I have.
I'm about to have a third.
Yeah.
Well, time of recording, about to have a third. Time of release.
Yeah.
We'll have a third.
Yes. Yeah. Hopefully. For your wife's sake, if nothing else.
Yeah. Hopefully it's come by now. Yeah. We've heard babies cry.
We have.
Yeah. What does that invoke for you? Let's start there.
Mm. Well, I think it's a little bit dependent on the situation in which I find myself, right? If it's my own child crying, it invokes things that are different than if I'm in an
on an airplane, yeah.
with my seat getting kicked and having that child scream at me, right? That's different. So we'll start with my own child. When my own child cries, what does it invoke in me? It invokes in me concern, compassion, a desire to care for the child. Yeah. It invokes in me a sense of a desire to hold and to love the child, to reassure, comfort, all of those things. And I think to a degree that's true for me personally, even for other children, right? Yeah. I mean, there's that element for me, and maybe it's because I'm still relatively close to that within my own kids, right? But if I hear another baby cry, like, it's first like, oh, I want to take care of that child, but also like, I want to take care of those parents because I know what they're going through too. Sure, and like, yeah. how can I have that compassion for them too?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is like our first form of communication, right?
Yeah.
It's just the wail.
Mm-hmm.
And that whatever's happening inside of us, whether I'm hungry, I need to be held,
mm-hmm.
I need to be changed.
Yep.
I'm tired.
Anything.
Or even like
I'm awake.
Or the more mysterious, like, yeah, like, yep. What do you do? Like, the baby's itchy.
Yep. What?
when the baby's crying, my instinct is not like, scratch that baby.
Get it right on the chin.
The baby has a headache. You know, like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, you know, these are things that maybe could be happening inside it, but he has no recourse but to wail.
Yes.
You know, like, that's it. All right. So, a literary scholar, Jonathan Rogers, notes that the English word infant is rooted in language one who's too young to speak.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I did not know that.
I would not have been able to say. Right. Too young to speak. Infant. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
I guess that's why. Yeah. I mean, if I think of like infant to toddler, I think of communication as like a key component in that. So that does kind of make sense to me.
All right. So we've got Ariel Dorfman here. He's going to quote Ariel Dorfman. Notes that psychologists have discovered that infant cry louder when mm-hmm. hearing the distress cries of other infants.
Sympathy cries. Okay.
They get it. Yeah. You know, my oldest, Timmy's first movie that he loved was Moana.
Yeah.
His favorite.
It's a good one.
And at the beginning, a child does cry out.
Yeah.
Because there's a scary story.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with Moana.
I mean,
I'm very, but...
Yeah. I'm conversive. I'm not like line sure. by line. Yeah.
Get on my level.
It's fair. Okay. So there's a child that cries out.
Yeah. And Timmy would cry when that baby cried.
Oh,
like,
okay.
And so for the first like significant number of times watching, we skipped over the first 3 minutes.
Because we don't need to start him crying again. Yeah.
And it's like we started there because the baby would cry. So he would cry.
Yeah. And it's not like that first 3 minutes is integral to the story. It's not like he saw an entirely different movie because he didn't have those first 3 minutes.
Well, I do have some setup.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Now he does like the first 2 minutes.
Okay.
We watch it a lot.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And so this is from Dorfman. Think about it. A baby is more upset by the voice of someone else's agony than by her own troubles. The baby intensifies the cries in solidarity with the other, shares the pain, signals to the other child that he is not alone.
Yeah.
For me, this is proof, even if we ever required it, that compassion is ingrained in our species.
Mm, I like
that. Coded inside the circuits of our brain, this is how we manage to become human, by creating the conditions for a social network where the suffering of others is intolerable, where we need to pity and comfort the afflicted.
Mm. So, okay, go ahead. You had a question. Well, I think here's my reflection. I love what he's saying, and I love the imagery. I thought that was more. Sorry.
This is Ariel Dorfman.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood who we were quoting. My apologies.
That's good.
So I love what she is saying and the description that she's offering there and this idea that compassion is ingrained in us. My question then becomes, when do we lose that? Because by the time we're an adult, if this year has taught us anything, it's that compassion for those around us is not inherently ingrained in us, right?
Yeah.
And we lean into self-preservation, we lean into
tribalism.
Yeah, yeah. All of this kind of mentality over compassion for the others. Compassion perhaps for those who are within our tribe,
yeah,
right, perhaps, but not just compassion at large. And so I wonder when that fades. What does that shift look like? And I don't know that this article gets into that, but that's my question.
Yeah, I don't
question
know. That's
that
a great question. I'm not sure when we become self-interested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's like 18 months. That's my guess. I think it's earlier than we want to admit.
Yeah, probably. You know, yeah, like I'd have to teach my baby that, like, hey, when you're upset, you should bite me.
Right. Yeah. Like, we didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. That's coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
Internally.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a learned behavior.
Yeah.
I never once was like, you need to go to sleep or I'm going to bite your this finger, knot out of your hand. But he learned.
That's right.
That's a way to do it. Yeah. Yeah. But I do think that this is really interesting, right? This idea of like, okay, crying is first. That's our first form of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also our first form of sympathy, you know, like, or of compassion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we hear other babies cry, so we cry out as well. And I think that this is really beautiful. Like, something that to remember when we hear babies. He has one more point that he's going to make here.
Okay.
He's going to tie this into from Romans chapter 8. That is where we have groanings too deep for words.
Mm-hmm.
And when we kind of pray, we have this just groanings. Like, we don't even know what to say. It's too deep for words. It's like the spiritual wail that is coming out to us and God.
I believe it's that the Spirit longs for the renewal of creation with groanings too deep for words. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do we make of this in terms of like wailing?
Yeah. I mean, I think there are a lot of cultures in which like funeral rituals involve intentional wailing, right? Periods mm-hmm. where words are not uttered, but somebody is wailing as a form of expressing the unspoken grief that we have. I think that out of COVID, we talked about this on the podcast at one point, there is an opportunity to go into the wilderness of Iceland, I think, and like scream into the void, essentially. Like, you could just, I don't remember what they did, but like, you could record a scream and they'd play it out into the wilderness or something. There was something. So I think there is this element to a primal form of expression that comes out as a wail or a scream, or that communication that doesn't involve words, but that expresses emotions that people around you just connect with and understand, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you are walking down the street and you see someone on a park bench wailing in pain, whether you have compassion on them or not, you at least understand something is not right.
Yeah.
Right? There's a form of communication happening there that is instinctual, that goes beyond communicating. They could speak an entirely different language, they could look completely differently than you, but you understand something is not right in the situation. And yeah. And I think that wailing allows us to do that.
100%. Yeah, I think that there's this, you know, a spiritual wail mm-hmm. is an important thing.
Yeah.
In the same way, a cry out that I don't even know how to ask for what I need or communicate my pain, that I just have to cry
mm-hmm.
and trust that the God on the other side figures it out.
Yeah.
Like the God gets what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I think that that's important. I mean, especially, you know, as things are hectic in our world, as we're about to transition to a new president, there are people going to be spiritually, emotionally wailing and saying, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't like it. And trust that a God on the other side hears and knows what to do.
And what's interesting there, right, is that God hears. It's not for the person next to you, right? I think that sometimes we hear the wail and we instinctively think, I need to fix this.
Yeah.
And I think that that is more often than not a sign of our own insecurity with the wailing, right? It is the, if we want to go back to the original metaphor, right? It is the impulse to control baby Jesus and turn it into a doll rather than to allow the baby to express the cry of the moment, right? And so we go in and we say, oh, well, what can I do to stop your wailing? And we try to fix the situation or we try to tell them to stop it, right? As opposed to trusting that this expression is worthy of being heard by God, whether it makes us uncomfortable or not. It's worthy of being heard by God, and God can do with that as God will.
Yeah. Yeah. He ends, one of the mysteries of the incarnation is that the Word who called the heavens, the Word, capitalized Word, that's Jesus.
That's Jesus.
Who called the heavens and earth into being became flesh,
beginning
right where we did. There's a baby whose words were only wails.
There you go.
Those crying baby sounds say more than a cheery Merry Christmas ever could. And when they interrupt our pageants or carols, let's stop just for a moment in awe. Let heaven and nature scream. In those cries, we might just hear a familiar voice. Yeah, I think, you know, and I think we've talked about this on the podcast before with Christmas, you know, like even like when we sing like Silent Night or, you know, Baby Jesus Doesn't Cry, basically. Yeah. Like we sing songs about it. Doesn't cry. Like that's crazy.
Yeah.
And like recognizing that this start of the greatest movement ever in Jesus invading our world and rescuing us all starts as a baby who wails, who cries, yeah. you know.
Needed a diaper change.
Yeah.
Kept Mary and Joseph up at night.
For sure.
Maybe had colic.
The holiest of holies has poopy diapers.
Yep.
The thunder in his footsteps has to take first steps.
Yeah.
You know, and the voice that speaks creation into existence cries. And
wails.
Yeah, wails it out.
For the renewing of creation.
Yeah.
To take it back to Paul. Just sure. know, bring it yeah. full circle. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that this is right there with us, right? Like, yeah. so as if you're wailing and crying internally, emotionally, spiritually,
yeah,
Jesus gets it.
Yeah. And I think too, right? I mean, even on a simpler level than that, like I'm with you 100%, right? Yeah. Jesus gets it. But, you know, it can often be so, what's the word I'm looking for? So tempting to hear a child scream, whether you're in church or in a public place or whatever, and assume that child is disruptive.
Yeah.
Right. Like you as a parent can feel that. Like sure. you as an observer can feel that. Right. And what would it mean for us to communally celebrate that wail? Like not in a way of like, oh, let that kid scream. We don't care that he needs a diaper change. Right. Like yeah. to acknowledge like that wail is a communication that reminds us all that we have an ability to scream and God hears us. Yeah. Right. Like, you know, so on Christmas Eve, when that baby is crying in the middle of silent night, thank God that we have a reminder that we can cry out to God too in the midst of
yeah.
a world that tells us we should be calm and peaceful. We can cry out to God. And that's really beautiful too.
All right.
So I've got a new greeting card idea. Okay. You know, the ones that like open up and have like Merry sure. Christmas playing or whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
We're going to open up. It's just going to be a child screaming.
I love it. Yeah.
yeah. It's going to, yeah. May your Christmas be filled with wails.
I'm sure at time of release, I'm hearing it.
Yeah, there you go.
You
can record it for us. You
bet. You want to come over? I got a Christmas card. Come on over my house. And baby will yell at you.
Merry Christmas from the Nazaroffs.
All right, I think that's good.
Yeah. Well, hey, we're almost to Christmas time, so send us your Christmas list. We want to know what you're asking Santa for this year, beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. We won't get it for you, but we'll put in a good word for you with the guy in the red suit. And yeah, that's all we got. So find all our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.